Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pod for this Monday, May 8th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from New York Oncology Hematology, sponsoring the Spring to Life Conference May 20th at the Albany Marriott. Open to public, including healthcare professionals and caregivers, newyorkoncology.com for information. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. John Mastrangelo of Nathan Litauer Hospital. He's here to answer your questions about radiology and related topics. We always get a lot of calls on this program, so get yours in now. The number is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So that's Dr. Mastrangelo, your calls, and much more all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. We have quite a celebrity joining us on the Medical Monday today, Dr. John Mastrangelo, Chief of Radiology and Chief of Staff at the Nathan Litauer Hospital in Gloversville, New York. He's board certified in radiology, received his medical degree from Albany Medical College, also completed a muscular skeletal imaging and intervention fellowship at Duke University Medical Center. Dr. Mastrangelo, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here again. Okay, so I got a couple of questions I got to ask you, and then people will be calling up and dialing 1-800-348-2551. You got it out there? 1-800-348-2551. Write it down. Okay. Got one call already, and we'll get to him in a moment. So before we do, every once in a while, one has to have a study done, a radiological study done. And there's always the question of whether or not you have dye put into your veins at the time. I've read some conflicting stuff on that. How safe is it?
It's pretty safe overall for what you...
It's the overall that bothers me.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chance whenever you put something in your body that you can have a
reaction
to it, whether that's something like penicillin or another over-the-counter medication, or in our case, we're injecting IV dye into somebody's venous system to help us to see things better.
I always say no. What happens when you say no? Does it really put you at a disadvantage?
Well, it really depends on what the doctor the study is looking for. Some of the stuff, and many times when you're asked to look at an exam, you don't really need the contrast to answer the question of, is there a renal stone? Is there appendicitis? Is there a lung nodule? There's lots of areas that you probably don't need IV contrast for, but there's lots of areas where it is very helpful to see some sort of malignant lesion or a metastatic lesion when somebody has known cancer. All of those studies should always be ordered with IV contrast unless there's some contraindication to it.
John, at Fairview Hospital, where I go in Great Barrington, they know me, I know them. Always great to... Do you have to establish a relationship with your patients, or do they basically deal with their doctor and you just go in and do the work?
Yeah, so it depends really on how the practice of radiology is set up. You know, there are some physicians that have a lot of face time. Whenever I do women's imaging and do mammography and do any sort of interventional procedure, whether it's a biopsy or an epidural steroid injection, something like that, you get a lot of face-to-face interaction.
You do the injections yourself?
That's correct, yeah.
Is that true of all radiologists?
Or? No, some don't, some do. And it depends on those sorts of things, you know, because radiology is such a varied field, depending on what your, you know, clinical interests are and your what you do during your day-to-day activities really kind of depends on how much face-to-face interaction you have with a patient. I can imagine there are some radiologists who get very little and others get a lot more.
So if I limit to your ER at 3 o'clock in the morning with a busted ankle, right, is there anybody there who will do that work?
This hospital is fully staffed, so you're going to have an x-ray exam done or whatever the ER doctor wants to order. the exam will be performed or the multiple exams will be performed, and then you'll get an interpretation on those studies within half an hour.
So who reads them? See, the reading is always interesting to me. I mean, I've gone into the ER. My wife had some kind of thing once we went in. And the ER doctor was showing us on the screen what was going on. So do these always have to be read by radiologists, or could they be read by, you know, regular doctors?
Sure. So everybody can look at an image, and they can tell you what they see. And then the radiologists typically get the final say and will offer up their opinion of what's going on and make sure that that is coinciding with the clinical history, if there's even one provided, and what happened from the ordering position standpoint.
Do you ever get woken up in the middle of the night, a phone call by somebody who says, hey, doc, we're sending this thing over to you on the, on your email or whatever. Can you read it?
Sure. So we have 100% connectivity with the internet. You can look at things from home, from another office setting, between offices because of the technology that we have at our disposal. And oftentimes you get phone calls, if you're reading at nighttime, from the technologist that's doing the study, especially in things that are very time sensitive, like somebody's having a stroke. You have a very limited window of when somebody needs to begin therapy. So oftentimes, if they're getting a head CT, for example, the technologist...
Oh, so if they're getting something?
A head CT, a CAT scan of their head, then they will, we'll get a call from the technologist that did that study and let us know that it's coming so that we can get a report out in the matter of seconds or minutes so that the doctor can know that there's no contraindication to getting them their definitive therapy.
Now, John, with all of this very interesting new stuff, you know, new for me is, of course, email, but all this new connectivity, can you share with other doctors in the country if you've got something that really is perplexing?
There's always that. I think there's that possibility, depending on if the networks are connected and what sort of relationships you have in terms of, you know, HIPAA compliance and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you don't want to violate any sort of patient confidentiality, but the technology is certainly there to allow various places to share information. For example, the VA system is set up all over the country. They're on the same network. Anybody from any VA can look at images at another VA, technically, using that network.
Cool. Let's take a call from Jim in Matamoros. So, all right. Let's see here. I got to stand up. Okay. All right. Jim in Matamoros, you're on.
The last couple of years, we've been seeing a lot of TV commercials for the cyber knife, and I believe that has a stationary beam. Isn't there another type of machine that has the same type of columns?
You're breaking up, Jim. You're breaking up. Go ahead, Doc.
I'm not exactly certain. I think that's a very interesting issue, and thanks for the question. But it's not something that, as a radiologist, I deal with. That would be more, I think, a question for a radiation oncologist or a radiation oncology therapist, something along those lines, which have more and more interaction with CyberKnife than somebody in my position would.
Thank you, Jim from Matamoros. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Well, really, really quickly, obviously, you will hear from time to time when somebody comes and says, somebody's calling for a picture of this or that. Is there anything that really gives you the shakes? You know, say, I don't like doing these.
Not really, no. I'm pretty comfortable looking at most of the things that we're, you know, asked to do. There's certainly, I'm a big believer in, you do stuff and you do it well, and the stuff that you're not going to do well, you shouldn't be doing.
Do you have to wear a card to make sure that you're not getting, you know, a lethal dose of whatever?
We have a little radiation badge that we have to wear at all times, and we are tracked to make sure that we're not exposed to an unnecessarily high amount of radiation, although that's extremely unlikely to happen.
Do you believe that?
Excuse me?
You really believe those people when they tell you, you know, you're not going to have a problem.
I probably am believing that I won't have a problem even if I'm above the limit that has been set.
Interesting. 1-800-348-2551. I don't see anything on here. I think the lid of things lit up, but I don't know. Okay, yes, let's go there. Should I go there? Okay, we'll be coming back in a few seconds, and we're going to go there to Jody. Okay.
Support comes from Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StonesoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Bassett Healthcare, providing information on partial knee replacement at educational seminars across Central New York. Dates and locations at SayNoToKneePain.com. Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services, including legal publishing and corporate records searches. ColbyService.com. Nine Pin Cider, Albany, hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room featuring New York cider, beer, wine, and spirits Tuesday through Sunday. Now available in Massachusetts. NinePinCider.com. And from Seniors Helping Seniors, offering support and camaraderie to local seniors, assisting them to live independently at home. 413-822-9988.
And we are back, and it's great to see you all here on Medical Monday. And we're here with Dr. John Mastrangelo of the Nathan Litauer Hospital. He's chief of staff and the chief radiologist. We've got a Jody in Sussex, New Jersey, 1-800-348-2551. All right, Jody, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask the doctor, I've had 5 CAT scans over 5 years, and I wanted to know, is it a cumulative? Is there any danger to me? Because I think I understand, I read somewhere that a CAT scan is equivalent to 200 x-rays.
Jody, that's a great question. Thanks.
It is.
Something
good
that,
question.
Something that we get asked quite a bit, actually. And to answer your question in short, yes, it's a cumulative dose, but there's also, you know, things that can happen if you have a high dose, whether the setting on the machine is wrong or whatever, with just a single exam. That being said, the cumulative dose that you're talking about, I think you have nothing to worry about with your 5 CAT scans over 5 years. That doesn't seem to be like something that I would be concerned with if it was my family member or even if it was myself.
I've had 5 over 5 years.
I understand, 5 over 5 years.
Okay.
That's not something that I would be too concerned about. And there's a couple reasons for that. This answer might be a little bit long-winded, but you'll understand why.
Take your time, doctor. We need you to get it right.
You know, the so all the data based that, you know, you get these news reports and news stories out there, a lot of the data regarding the dangers of radiation is based off of the atomic bomb explosions in Japan during World War II. And that kind of radiation is much different than the kind of ionizing radiation that we use in medical imaging in today's world. So the kind of radiation that we use in today's world has much less detrimental effects and much less deeper penetration than what those survivors of the atomic bomb blasts were exposed to. So the data is all extrapolated based on that patient population. It's kind of like comparing apples to oranges. That being said, we know that certain people have had radiation-induced malignancies because of their exposure to various things, like when radon was used in watches.
Mm.
We know that people got osteosarcoma from that. So there's a lot of history behind this issue. To make it long story short, the use of CT scanning is the highest type of radiation that you can get in the field of imaging. So whether it's an X-ray, an MRI, a CT scan, the CT has the most radiation. However, there's a lot of benefits to getting that exam in many instances. It has the greatest spatial resolution, so you can see the smallest structures with CT scans versus any of those other imaging modalities. And that being said, there's better and better technology every year that allows you to have a lower and lower radiation dose. So the CT scan that you got most recently probably is a fraction of the dose of what you got 5 years ago. The technology literally has gotten to be that good and continues to evolve, so that we're trying to limit the amount of radiation, because the American College of Radiology and every radiologist should really adhere to the principle of something called ALARA, A-L-A-R-A, which stands for as low as reasonably achievable. So our goal whenever doing any sort of imaging study is to get the answer to the question that your doctor's ordering while doing an exam with the lowest possible dose.
Okay, and also I'm reading high in uranium, and we don't know where it's coming from. Would that have anything to do with a CAT scan?
It would not.
I don't get the question. What's the question here?
What's the question?
Yeah, you're reading high in...
In uranium.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. I'm sorry.
They did a blood test, and I was high in lead and uranium.
Okay.
Yeah, it should not have anything to do with it. Okay. to do with the CAT scan.
Check what's underneath the house. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551. Lines are looking good here, folks. 1-800-348-2551. If you've ever wanted to know something about CAT scans or any of the other devices, you call us and let us know. We're going to go now to Devin in the Hudson Valley. Devin, you're on.
Hey, how are you? I just had a quick question. I have a lot of nerve damage or pain in my lower back. I was wondering how much of the nerve can they actually see through these MRIs?
That's a great question, Devin. So you can actually see anatomy in exquisite detail, depending on how good the MRI equipment is, how good the MRI protocol is, and in part how good of a patient you are in cooperating with the exam in terms of staying still and letting the technologist, you know, do their job to get pictures.
How about weight? Does weight count?
Yeah, sometimes weight can have an impact on how clear something might look in terms of the magnet. When you're in the MRI, if somebody is so large that they are almost not able to fit on the MRI, depending on the coil that you're used, which is how you get your imaging, you might have an inhomogeneous field, which would create some blurriness in areas, to put it in layman's terms. But in general, Devin, to answer your question, I think you can see quite a bit, and especially the areas of the nerves that typically cause pain and where the discs and scarring and arthritis can really affect things. We can really get a good detail of how big your canal is, if there's foraminal narrowing, is one nerve larger than the other, is one nerve edematous. Some things you can't see, but a lot of it you can, and it's actually it's a very good study.
Now, just for those people who are listening now, Doc, explain the difference about why do you want an MRI versus a CAT scan? What do they do?
Sure. So for back problems, really an MRI is much better than a CAT scan, primarily because the MRI has superior contrast resolution. If you note on the last caller when they called, I talked about CT having great spatial resolution, meaning you can see very small things, much smaller than an MRI, although MRI is approaching CT. An MRI for the back, where you're looking at nerves, you're really concerned about contrast resolution, in that your nerves are a solid structure, and they're surrounded by CSF in your thecal sac, which surrounds your spinal cord. So you have two very different, you know, substances, and MRI kind of helps bring out that anatomy, and you have the bone next to it, and you have the disc material next to that. So you can kind of distinguish all four of those different densities and substances next to each other with MRI much better than CT, which CT kind of, those soft tissue structures, the bone would be better with CT, but the other stuff would sort of blend into each other. You can still see it. You can still see a big disc bulge on a CT scan, but you might not see the nerves as well. You might not see the foraminal narrowing or the central canal narrowing as well as you can on an MRI.
Do you ever have to do both?
Sometimes you do, and sometimes we're asked to do a CT scan after injecting somebody's spine with contrast, with a dye, like we talked about before. And that's what that's doing, is that's increasing the contrast resolution of the CT scan. So now we're having that substance that we've injected outlining the nerves and outlining the spinal cord. And in some ways, you can see almost as good as an MRI. And in some ways, it's better because you get a little bit better look at the bones.
Devin, thank you for your call. Okay, we're going to go now to Frank in Queensbury, and you know that everybody plays by the rules. Okay, Frank, you're on.
Hi, my question is, why is it always first choice for a CAT scan when MRI seems to show a clearer picture?
So, Frank, so that's another great question. And the issue is, does the MRI give you a better picture? In some cases, I think that's appropriate to say. In other cases, I think that would not be an appropriate statement. So, in part, it depends on what you're looking for. And another part of that, scenario is that CTs are performed. You can get a CT scan done in about 30 seconds. So for certain things, a CT scan is just much more practical, whereas an MRI would take 20 to 25 minutes in some places, depending on how they're looking at things and what sort of protocol they're using. It might take an hour or even more.
If somebody's having a heart attack, do you ever take pictures?
Hardly ever. Not in my clinical practice. There are some places and some people that have looked at doing CT angiograms to look at somebody's coronary arteries during the heart attack, but we don't currently do that in most of the places that I've worked.
Frank, any follow up?
That's good. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
No, thanks, Frank. You. Okay, we are going now to go to Teresa, who is in Troy. But before we do, I want to say you got a lot of free lines here. If you've ever wanted to ask a question about any of this, this is the time to do it. Don't be saying later at night, I should have had a V8 and asked the question. Okay, we'll go to Teresa in Troy. All right, Teresa, you're on.
Teresa. Hi, can you hear me?
We can, perfectly.
Okay, great. I am having some carpal tunnel problems in my wrist. And I'm actually scheduled to have carpal tunnel surgery, but my concern is that it's not necessarily coming from my wrist, but maybe a pinched nerve along my, somewhere between my neck and my arm. Would it be reasonable for me to ask to get an MRI? Only because, then the reason I ask is because while I'm sleeping on my side, both of my wrists go numb, even with my braces on.
So, Trisha, I'm sorry that you're going through that. That doesn't sound very pleasant. Thank you for the question. I'll try to answer this the best I can, and that I think that
okay.
I don't think it's unreasonable to ask for an MRI, and I certainly read a lot of MRIs of the wrist for those sorts of symptoms. That being said, sometimes the MRI doesn't show what might be causing some of the neuropathy that you seem to be experiencing. So I would defer to your orthopedic surgeon based on their physical exam and their clinical findings and, you know, where your numbness and tingling are. Is it in the distribution of the median nerve, the ulnar nerve, the radial nerve? Where is it? Based upon the physical symptoms, they can typically tell, you know, where the problem is coming from and then make a clinical judgment of, A, whether or not you need surgery. Do you need an injection? Do you need something like that? Should we repeat braces? There's all different options to deal with this sort of issue, and really it's in the purview of your orthopedic surgeon to figure out where and what to do next. And if they think that you need surgery, that certainly is an option that a lot of people go through to help them get better.
Right, I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You call now, and I'm telling you, you're going to be on the phone in 1 minute, 1 second flat. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Doc, I got a couple of questions for you. Some places advertise, one way or another, total body scans. In other words, you go in, you give them the money, and they're going to look through your entire body to find out if there's anything. Now, the downside, obviously, is they get false positives and people get crazy. On the other hand, isn't it a good idea that because, you know, we don't look until something else has happened? You know what I'm talking about here?
I've heard of these things. I've never actually read one before or seen one. During my fellowship at Duke, we did do whole body MRIs for people, especially, but it wasn't people that would walk in off the street. It was they had a known problem. They had a known malignancy, and we were looking for an overview of where metastatic lesions could be.
Now, I know pancreases are tough, right? The big reason that so many people die of pancreatic cancer, as I understand it, is that it's very hard to find it. I mean, you know, by the time they find it, you're on the way to being dead. So, if you had a whole body scan, wouldn't it pick up on something like pancreatic cancer?
It may or may not. I think that pancreatic cancer is typically pretty easy to see with MRI.
You got to look for it.
But exactly. You have to actually get the imaging study done to look at it. And like you said, pancreatic cancer is, in part, it's deadly because we don't find it until it's already passed beyond a surgical option. So because of the anatomy where the pancreas is, the tumor that is typically located in the head of the pancreas can wrap itself around an artery and a vein in that area, and that would preclude some people from doing surgery and make the patient give them less options from a treatment standpoint.
So we're making any advances in the pancreatic thing?
I think we're making advances all over medicine in terms of treatment options for people with cancer, as well as detection and screening. And I think the future is bright, especially with immune modulation and immune therapy. You might see some of the commercials for large, non-small cell, squamous cell lung cancer, whatever. They have a chemotherapeutic drug. I don't deal directly with some of this stuff, but I read about it. And it's exciting to see maybe 10, 20 years from now what sort of medications and or treatment options that we might have for cancer that doesn't require chemotherapy and radiation and all that stuff.
Cool.
We might be able to use our immune systems to fight the disease for us.
Well, I don't know what you said, but about 11 people got on the phone at the same time. I'm not quite sure what that's all about. But anyway, we'll go to Nicole in North Adams. Nicole, you're on. Hey, Nicole.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm good.
Great. How are you doing?
Good. I was wondering, you hear about, you know, you're not supposed to have any metal on or in your body when you have an MRI, and I was just wondering how common it actually is to have something ripped out or off of your body by accident.
Well, I think that's a great question, and I think that it probably happened a lot more than it does now, in part because everybody's so attentive to that subject. So before somebody gets an MRI, typically they go through extensive screening to see if they have had a prior gunshot wound, a prior hunting injury where there might be shrapnel or BB somewhere. If they work with metal and they're a welder or something like that, we'll do an orbital x-ray to make sure there's no small flecks of metal near the eye and eyeball and nerves in that area. But you have to remember that we do a lot of MRIs on patients with metal in their body all the time. They have surgical screws and plates and that kind of stuff. And some of it is not, it's not dangerous, but some, depending on the kind of metal and where it is, and if it's near a vascular structure or near a nerve, we want to avoid. So that's why we go through, we try to implement extensive screening. Usually the radiologist is consulted prior to going through the magnet, just, you know, for patient safety.
Okay, thanks, Nicole. Let's go to Mary in Saratoga Springs. Mary, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, doctor. Thanks for taking my call. I have a basic question about an MRI versus a PET scan. I've had three MRIs for brain lesions. The first showed just a small scatter, and then the second probably tripled in number, and the third kind of remained the same. So it's been 6 months. I'm due to go back again, and for the last 4 months, we've been experiencing a lot of bizarre bone pain, just some really weird side effects, symptom type things, which could be secondary to biologic treatments that I've been undergoing the last 2 years. So would it be wise for me to at least mention the fact that if we could do a PET scan, would that kind of take care of both subjects?
Sure. So Mary, thanks for your question. I'll keep you in my prayers when, I'm sorry that you're going through this. It's an interesting question that you bring up, you know, in the clinical scenario that you present with PET scan versus MRI, which is a common question. You know, they're both very, very, very useful studies, especially for this sort of topic when we're dealing with some sort of cancer or lesion. But you have to remember that most PET scans, they utilize something called glucose and a F18 glucose, and your brain uses glucose as fuel. So that's why I think probably an MRI is much better than a PET scan for your brain lesions, because when you look at a PET scan, the brain lights up like a light bulb. It's very, very bright because it's utilizing what you're injecting, the glucose. So it might hide some smaller lesions. You still might see them, but I think an MRI is a much better study for you to go, and you've had prior ones to compare it with. So,
okay,
Mary, thank
All right,
you.
Great,
thank you, Mary. Okay, we'll go to Jeff in Gloversville. Oh, you know what, Jeff, you have to hold on a second. We're going to have a short break. A couple of seconds, we'll be right back.
Support comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig. A worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation services and deliveries, GeorgePropane.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and no-moo, dairy-free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more, Harold's.com. Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region. Practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. And from Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York. Working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design, and development, and graphic design for almost three decades, ShannonRose.com.
And we are delighted to be back here with Dr. John Mastandrolo, of the Chief of Staff as well as Chief of Radiology at Nathan Litauer Hospital. We'll go to Jeff in Gloversville. He looks like he might be a radiologist himself. Are you, Jeff?
Hi. I've got a question about radiology.
Okay.
I'm a former smoker, and my general practitioner has suggested that I get a scan, but I'm claustrophobic, and I wonder if I need to have an MRI.
So, Jeff, I'd like to, thank you for your question. It's a great question, and, it's great that your primary care physician was thinking about sort of an imaging test to do for somebody like you that has smoked in the past. And recently there's a new technology. It's really more of a modification of an older technology, but you can undergo a lung cancer screening CT scan. And at the hospital that I'm at, which is in Gloversville, where it seems like you're from, we're an accredited lung cancer screening facility. So you can get a low-dose chest CT exam, and that will look for small nodules that might not be detectable on a chest x-ray. And you'll be able to figure out what the next step is, whether you need to see a pulmonologist or go back to your primary care physician, whether or not you need another scan to see if that nodule is growing or not. And it doesn't matter if you're currently smoking or you have stopped. Your primary care physician and you, based upon how many years you smoked for, how many pack years, there's all these different sorts of criteria which might make you a candidate for a lung cancer screening CT. And CT definitely would be the way to go versus an MRI for that sort of situation.
Now, we have heard from many people that if you're out for 10 years since smoking, you're home free. Is that true?
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that, more and more literature and data comes out and says that it doesn't really matter when you stop to some degree. There's always a risk, depending on how long you smoked for, what your total damage was. And so while your pulmonary function may get better, you might breathe better, there's still damage done to your lungs, and that places you at some degree of risk for developing cancer in the future.
Okay, Jeff, thank you.
Much, doctor.
Thank you.
All right. And now we'll go to Saratoga. Yes, we're going to go to Saratoga for the races. Okay, Saratoga, you're on. It's David in the Saratoga.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. Hello there. Can you hear me okay?
We can, perfectly.
Hi, Dr. David Gebbe in Saratoga Springs. I was just heading back to see patients, and I heard the gal call in with carpal tunnel syndrome, and it's wonderful to hear an articulate, intelligent physician giving her advice. But one of the things I wanted to add to this, as opposed to an MRI or going back to the orthopedist, one of the things I would suggest is getting an EMG done. What that does, it measures nerve conduction anywhere from the cervical spine all the way into the carpal tunnel, and it'll help ascertain if the carpal tunnel is primary at the carpal tunnel. She can get an impingement at the radial, ulnar nerve at the elbow, brachial plexus underneath the arm, or cervical spine from disc disease. And the fact that she had symptoms when she was laying down, even when she had a carpal tunnel brace on to keep the wrist in a neutral position, tells me that she may be getting an impingement from someplace else besides the carpal tunnel. And if we don't get five or six of these a year where somebody has had carpal tunnel release and still has symptoms, only to find out it was a cervical spine that was giving you the impingement as opposed to a carpal tunnel. So that's where the neurologist comes in, and getting an EMG done can very often pinpoint and give the orthopedist a primary site to look at as opposed to just doing carpal tunnel surgery.
Well, thank you for that. That's
absolutely
very, very
I think
helpful.
That's spot on. I think that, you know, you see not just in the wrist, but anywhere, shoulder, neck.
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely.
People
have, can take any place. Yeah.
People have, you know, their shoulders repaired, and after their shoulder surgery, they still have shoulder pain or neck, and then they realize, oh, it's coming from my cervical spine. So, you know, pinpointing the site of the problem is the first step.
Thanks, David.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you.
Yep. All right, we're going to go to Betty in Saugerties. Betty in Saugerties, you're on. Betty in Saugerties, you're on.
This is Betty in Albany.
Oh, well, it says here Betty in Saugerties. Somebody messed up. Go ahead.
Okay, my husband had surgery back in 1969 on one of his ears, and they put in a what they call a fat wire prosthesis, stainless steel wire. In his ear. So I'm just wondering if down the road, if he ever needed a MRI on his head for any reason, would that be a problem? It's a 4.5 millimeter long stainless steel wire, size 50.
Yes, I'm not sure exactly what that is, but there is a whole
list.
Yeah,
it was a long time ago.
Sure, but there's a whole listing of, we have a book that we consult when there are things that are not as common, like what you're describing, that we check the database and make sure that it's MRI compatible, or if it's not MRI compatible, and then we advise from there.
All right, so that would be determined at the time. What would we tell someone? We'd just tell them the story of the...
Sure, it's part of the screening process that you'd undergo, and once they discover, you know, once you, you know, told the technologist or whoever's doing the screening that there's something in the ear, they'd have to just try to get that information from you and look it up in the records to see, is this something that we can do an MRI on, and if not, what are the other options?
All righty. Thanks a lot.
You're yep. welcome.
1-800-348-2551. We're going to go to Tim and Troy, TNT. All right, Tim, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I guess this is a follow-up on the lady who called in and had five CAT scans in 5 years. About this time last year, I was originally diagnosed for having a cancerous tumor on my liver, which turned out to be misdiagnosed. But to go through the procedure, I had multiple CAT scans with and without contrast. I had a PET scan. I had multiple MRIs, and finally in November, when yet another CAT scan was ordered up, I had to intervene and tell the doctor I didn't want to take another CAT scan. So my question is this. Should the physicians be concerned? Do they get concerned at all, or do they even pay attention to the amount of radiation that you've received over a short period of time? Now, I'm talking from May until November of last year. And secondly, is there anything I should follow up with or anyone I should follow up with given that frequency of CAT scans, PET scans, et cetera, in such a short period of time?
Sure. So it's something that everybody's concerned with, I think, and certainly it's, you know, raises some red flags when you get, you know, three or four CAT scans in the matter of a couple months. But I don't know that I would be that concerned about it if I were you. First of all, it's great news that it wasn't you know, what they thought it was at first, some bad
acting.
It turned out to be an abscess. Right.
And they treated
So, that's good news, you know, that it's not something that was malignant or something that was more aggressive. And I'm glad that it seems like you're doing well. But that being said, I wouldn't be too concerned about getting a bunch of CAT scans because, as we kind of alluded to before, you know, in your case, as low as reasonably achievable meant that they needed to do some extra imaging studies to figure out that it wasn't cancer. And it took a little while, but they got the right answer eventually.
Thank you, Tim. Okay, we're going to go to Anita in Putnam County now. Anita, it's your turn. You're on. Hello, Anita. Anita, are you there? Well, it says Anita in Putnam County. All right. I'm sorry, Anita. Something has gone terribly wrong here. Don't know what it is. I'm going to hang up. Okay. Now, let's go to Louise in Saugerties. Louise, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking
Great.
The call.
Sure.
I'm wondering about what happens if, for a patient who has a pacemaker, is that automatically not eligible for MRI? And if so, what are the other options where an MRI would normally be recommended?
Louise, so that's a great question. And more and more pacemakers that are being put into people are able to be scanned in an MRI in the right setting.
How so?
So depends on where you are and what sort of machine it is, but working with your cardiologist, sometimes, depending on the type of pacemaker that you have, it can be, you know, set to a different mode. You can get your MRI scan, and then you'd have to go see the cardiologist afterwards for them to recalibrate the pacemaker so that they know that it's still functioning correctly. But some of the older pacemakers, that's not applicable for, but more and more are actually able to be scanned in an MRI.
Uh-huh. I really don't know. I mean, this was put in 2014, but it may be an older one.
So, yeah, you just got to look into it with the doctor and see, depending on where you're going to go for your scan, what the situation is. Like, just like everything else, once we get to that screening part, I'm sure that will be uncovered, and they'll have to get the product information from you.
Thank you, Louise. Okay, let's go to Dan in Troy, New Hampshire. Huh. Troy, New Hampshire. All right, Dan, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, Dan.
All right, go ahead.
I was wondering if these brain scans, the MRIs and everything, are used to monitor what the brain is doing as far as being stimulated by different substances and things. Is it a cumulative, or are they using different things to map the brain in new ways? And do these MRIs cause any activity in the brain while they're going on?
Sure. So that's something that, you know, people do in research and research fields. They use MRI as a tool like that, especially some of the newer technologies with diffusion tensor imaging and that kind of stuff. And even in the operating room, sometimes in some places they'll do an MRI while they're doing brain surgery to see what area of the brain is affected and what they can take out and what they want to leave alone.
Okay, so it doesn't stimulate areas of the brain. It just monitors the whole process. And
I think it does all of that. Thanks for the question.
Oh, and it doesn't accumulate. Thanks.
All right. Now we're going to go to, Helen. Helen in South Egremont. Hello, Helen.
Hi. This terrific program. I have a couple of questions about scans for bone densities versus MRIs. And one is what kind of, how does the radiation rank for low, medium, high for bone density? And the other question is, with hip replacements, metal, I can have an MRI, but I have to have the bone density done, part of it, in my forearm. Why can't a bone density be done the way the others are?
So
have hip replacements.
That's a great question, Helen. Thanks. And that's a great, you know, scenario that you're discussing. Bone density scans are very low radiation. And
okay,
one of the things that you measure that we have good data for, and that's what we compare bone density studies with, are people's hips and their spine. And so if you have a prosthesis, some sort of metal in your hip, then we have to sample somewhere else where there's no metal. So we're just trying to get a realistic value to see how dense your bones are and give our best estimate relative to people, other people that are your age and your gender. And that's what we compare it with to determine if somebody has a low bone mineral density or not. But so that's why we used your forearm instead of your hip.
But when one gets a DEXA scan, I don't notice that the people who are doing them are all covered the same way that radiologists and technicians are. Is there a reason for that?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, in other words, I've had DEXA scans, and then the question is, the technician is standing right next to me, doesn't seem to be a problem about becoming radioactive.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably part of it is due to how the scan is done and what kind of machine is being used.
I see. Okay. Yep. Thanks a lot for that. Okay. Now we're going to go. Let's see. I'm looking for who's on the longest, and that would appear to be, yes, Dean in Springfield. Okay, Dean in Springfield, you're on.
Hi. I had a CAT scan of my sinuses about a month and a half ago. Showed complete opacification of my maxillary sinuses.
Okay.
And that was after 5 rounds of antibiotics.
All right.
So I'm scheduled to have surgery to clear all this out. I'm just curious because I've had a couple of CAT scans and x-rays. How accurate is this stuff before they start drilling into my skull? Just a little bit nervous because the surgery is scheduled and all that fun stuff.
And while you're on it, doctor, tell us what opacification is.
Yeah, so Dean, that is a great utilization for CT scan when we're talking about sinuses and sinus disease. And when they say opacification, that basically means that you can't see any of the normal aerated sinus. Normally your sinuses have air in them and that's how everybody functions. Yours are opacified, which means they're socked in with stuff, whether it's mucus, polyps, or whatever. Sometimes they can't tell what that is. There are some other clues looking at the bony detail to give you a clue that there might be something else going on, but the best way to kind of go in there and take a look and clean you out and see how things are after that. So I think that the CT was a good thing.
Thanks, Dean. Okay, now we have to go to Lou in Rome, where all roads lead. Okay, Lou, you're on.
Hey, hi, doctor. I've had a lot of CAT scans and x-rays in my life. Never been offered lead protection. Always will ask, and maybe 5-second delay right nearby is the protection. Why isn't it mandatory that these attendants aren't required to request if people want protection?
Sure. So that's a great great question, and you're from my hometown. So the issue really is, what are we imaging? So certain things you don't need protection for, and that the radiation dose is so low for your x-rays and that kind of stuff. Typically, that's not offered. But CT scans, sometimes you can get protection, especially if there's a young male or a young female or something like that. We'll put a breastplate over their breasts or something to cover their genital area if they're a male to protect them if they're young and at risk in terms of decreasing some sort of function. But there's not really great studies out there to say this helps or this doesn't help, and that's probably in part why it's not a very common thing that anybody does. You're not really stopping a lot of the radiation in CT scan because it's not just a direct thing from the scanner. There's scatter radiation that when the machine is operating, there's radiation throughout the whole room that's occurring. So even if you have a plate or some sort of device which is going to block some of it from one direction, you still get it from the other. So it's kind of in some ways, it's not an ideal situation.
I notice you've had a glow to yourself since you've been sitting here. So,
thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay. We really don't have any more time, so I'm going to ask you, I want to apologize to Jeff at Poughkeepsie and Ann in Stockbridge and Andy in Amherst and Matt in Newburgh. We just couldn't get to your questions in time here. We have to go. But in the meantime, Matt, John, one real fast question, and that is, what is the hardest place to scan in the body?
It depends really on what kind of scan you're going to do and where what you're looking for. I think that in MRI, I think the small things, so like the tips of the toes and the tips of the fingers are hardest because you get a lot of artifact in that area.
Well, we are out of time. Let's see here. The support for the Medical Monday comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Thanks to our engineer, the incomparable Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phones, keeping me honest. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Thanks for joining us on the Vox Pop. Tomorrow, Republican Congressman John Faso of the Hudson Valley joins us on the show. At least he says so, and we'll be delighted to have him here. Stay tuned now for a news update.